As the violence continues in Fallujah and elsewhere, U.S. commanders are facing a challenge: how to gain the upper hand in areas largely under insurgent control before January's scheduled elections. NPR's Eric Westervelt has that story.
Since the aborted April assault on Fallujah, the U.S. has regularly used air and artillery power to strike at homes and warehouses thought to be sanctuaries for Sunni insurgents and foreign fighters. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld recently said that Iraq's interim government will eventually have to do even more to secure Fallujah and other insurgent-controlled zones.
For their country to succeed, they simply cannot, over a sustained period of time, have areas that are under the control of people who are violently opposed to that government. And they will find a way, over time, to deal with it.
One way to deal with it, of course, would be another large-scale U.S.-led attack to rout insurgents. But that strategy, again, carries risks of high U.S. and Iraqi casualties, one of the main reasons for the aborted Marine attack on Fallujah in April. Military analyst Charles Heyman says Iraqi casualties, in turn, raise the backlash specter that haunts every counterinsurgency campaign.
As the number of civilian casualties increases as a result of coalition operations, then you get more and more people coming over onto the side of the insurgents.
But the recent U.S.-led attacks in Najaf, others argue, could prove a model for a powerful strike into Fallujah without inflicting massive civilian deaths. Analyst Dan Garay says the Najaf battles against Muqtada Sadr's militia showed U.S. troops successfully using armor in a dense urban area around some of the most sacred sites in Shiite Islam.
Heavy armor, precise use of air power, not going down main streets, not essentially doing it kinder and gentler, but not being wholesale profligate in the use of firepower, works very well.
Pentagon officials insist any major new offensive like that in Fallujah, if it occurs, won't happen until enough U.S.-trained Iraqi forces are ready to fully participate. Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman General Richard Myers recently said that enough Iraqis could be ready by year's end.
By December, we're going to have a substantial number of Iraqi security forces equipped, trained, and led to conduct the kind of operations I was talking about.
Right now, officials say there are only just over 90,000 adequately prepared Iraqi troops, and new Iraqi units have had an incredibly uneven, in some cases disastrous, track record. So some see a continued dramatic gap between high hopes in Washington and the reality on the ground in Iraq.
There's a, you know, almost a pathological hope to accentuate the positive against all hope, a culture of denial and willful naivety.
Iraq expert Toby Dodge with Queen Mary University of London says there's no way Iraqi forces will be ready before January elections to help retake insurgent strongholds and secure the country for voting. Dodge thinks it will take 5 more years at least to raise a competent Iraqi army and police force, a timeline that once again, he says, sets up Iraqis and Americans for painfully unrealistic expectations.
The whole problem that has haunted Iraq since regime change is a series of very bold, and I'm sure very sincere, promises have been made to the Iraqi people and then broken because the United States occupation and now the interim Iraqi government hasn't had the capacity to deliver on those bold promises.
U.S. officials insist that a January vote for a new National Assembly is on track. Interim Iraqi President Iyad Alawi said he wants a vote to go forward, even if it means excluding insurgent strongholds. Referring to Fallujah's population, Alawi told British newspapers this week, "Frankly, 300,000 people are not going to alter 24 million people voting." Dan Garay with the Lexington Institute agrees.
Part of the country is in rebellion against its own government. That's nothing new in the fate of the Middle East or probably even Iraq.
Still, UN Secretary General Kofi Annan this week warned, "You cannot have credible elections if the security conditions continue as they are now in Iraq." But any delay carries huge risks. Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani, a highly revered and unifying figure among Iraq's Shia, has made one central demand since Saddam's overthrow: national elections. Any move to postpone, analysts say, could spark an even wider Shiite uprising as followers of the more moderate Sistani reach their breaking point. Eric Westervelt, NPR News, Washington.